You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Natalie Alper. Natalie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Brainerd, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. Can you tell me a little bit about the body of work you're making now or what's happening in your studio?
Well, it's kind of a continuity from what I've been working on for some time. I work on both large-scale painting and drawing, which I keep as a fairly separate practice and always have. For some reason, it's worked out that way. And so that is...
So what do you mean by a separate practice? But between the large-scale paintings and the drawings, you approach them, because you approach them so differently, you see them as unrelated types of work? Is that what you mean?
Well, I do, because the paintings, the drawings that I originally had done, actually, and were basically calligraphic writing that alluded to language, and I had that show some time ago, fortunately, at the Phillips Collection in D.C., and they form the underpinnings of the painting that I do now. I think that we depend so much on connections to language, and language is our filter. And so this writing is calligraphic. It's not about words. There are no words, but it is a writing movement that covers the canvas and forms more or less an isometric grid, and then the paint forms are on top of that, and in areas where the paint is thin and there are interstices between the forms, you still see the skeleton, basically, of the writing, and that's how it goes.
That's very interesting, because writing, it seems almost, I know it's not an automatic writing, but having that base, that kind of content, and maybe we should talk more about that content in work like this. And it seems to me that it's as though there is an urgent message of some kind, though it may not be readable or even something about the way messages come through people, you know, in general, right? How ideas go to artists or poets. Is that part of the content? And I don't know, I'm trying to talk, I know it's hard, about the content in the work and how you approach that.
Well, I think so. I think it's because our experience, no matter how direct or sensual or varied it is, still we have a language filter that we use as human beings that interpret our connection to the world. And this writing is both an acknowledgement of that filter that we have, and forms a kind of mediator between the raw canvas and the blank canvas, rather, and the forms that are then made on top of this grid.
That makes sense, and that is a content-rich approach, as I see it. We were talking a little bit before the interview, and I meant to touch on it, about the departure your work made with other forms, other similar forms. Can you talk a little bit about that in terms of how you saw, you know, similar schools of work and how you departed from that?
Departure, Brainerd, in what sense? How
well, how you defined yourself in, as I understand it, in your approach to content, you know, that was different from other painters.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things to consider, I graduated from the museum school in the 70s, and color field painting and Greenbergian dicta was still hanging out in Boston, and this was something I was really rebelling against. I was very interested in ideas of how art and science had a commonality. I was very interested in chaos theory and the idea of initial conditions and how once something was initiated and went through various permutations, it became something that you didn't necessarily expect. And I think that kind of thinking, I'd read this wonderful book by Mitchell Feigenbaum about that, written for laymen, and it just somehow felt right about how I wanted to paint. I really was not interested in totally formalist abstraction, and also not in figuration, even though I had a very academic Beaux-Arts training at the museum school.
Right. Well, what was your first show after that training, and when you were out of school? How did you first approach your first show, if we can talk about that, or the nearest to that?
Well, you know, that's interesting. The museum school had an independent fifth-year program where you worked on a body of work and presented it, and then it was judged by an independent group of art people that did not have anything to do with the museum school, that were not part of the faculty. So they were coming in and looking at the work that was presented, and I was fortunate enough to get a very wonderful traveling fellowship, which also included an exhibition at the MFA at the time. And people saw my work, and I was approached by people in this area who were involved at the ICA and at the Addison and wonderful places like that. And it was really incredible. I mean, in a way, it made me think, oh, this is so easy, you know, to get your work shown. Well, I did learn after that, but that's how it all started.
Right. And then what did happen next? Was there was a point where it was very difficult to get work shown as we move forward in your kind of trajectory?
Well, I mean,
you know, I don't mean to ask anything too personal, but I just mean, you know, that's very interesting, right? Some people talk that way, and that's especially current now. People buy something when someone's in an MFA program or whatever, and everything seems like it's going to work out, and you think everything's going to come to you, and then it turns out it doesn't. So I guess I'm just asking a little bit about that process, because, you know, I've experienced that, of course, myself, as I'm sure many artists have. So after that process, I guess I'm asking, what happened next? What were the next shows, and maybe how did those come about, which would explain that learning curve a little bit, perhaps?
Well, I think that I had some really good luck at the time. Someone saw my work and recommended it to Betty Parsons, who was a doyenne in New York art, and I was in a show at her gallery. And I mean, you know, in some ways, because it was so easy in the beginning, I didn't learn anything about how hard it was, and that's come later.
Right. And so what happened next? What was the next maybe big show for you that kind of made you feel that I don't know, your work was maturing, you know, and we were just talking about after graduate school. Well, what do you see as the next big show that came after that?
Well, I had a one-person show at the wonderful Addison Gallery.
Mm. Right, that is beautiful.
And that was.
So let's talk about that show a little bit. How did people respond to that show, and you know, how did that feel for you? Because now that's you're maturing as an artist, and this is your kind of vision or what you're saying is becoming more clear to some degree, isn't it? Or wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was amazing. It really was, and people were very generous and supportive, and I have since the Addison did have my work in their collection, and more recently I was in a show curated by, well, someone you know well, Jock Reynolds, who did American Abstraction at the Addison, and my work was included there, and I had a wonderful show at the Phillips Collection in D.C. And it's interesting. I've had less opportunity in Boston, where I'm living, and I had taught at the Museum School and at the Carpenter. Less opportunity recently, I should say. At the Carpenter Center at Harvard, and I taught at the Museum School for a very long time. I'm not teaching now. I really have to focus on my work. But teaching was also an incredible experience because it made me really think hard about what I was about, and that was important.
Yeah, and if I can ask you throughout, I mean, you know, artists are listening to this, and some academics, but a lot of artists, and listening to kind of your story or how people kind of grew in their careers, without maybe talking about specific things, is there something that you learned professionally, you know, after your beginning that you think is worth passing on to people or other artists can know or be prepared for, because it is such a kind of unknown territory when even where it gets old or you get introduced, but then things don't evolve as quickly as you want, or they're difficult relationships and you weren't schooled in that. Is there anything you can share about that you think artists should know?
Oh, that's a very hard question to answer, because everyone's personality is very different. And, you know, some people are, I had the good fortune of having some really serious people see my work. So I didn't really have to work that hard at it. I think it's getting a little harder now. And part of it is that painting is not the major focus of people's commitment in the way that it was at a certain period of time. I mean, I think everyone has to do what's comfortable to their personality. And the most important thing is to do your work, to look at other people's art, to think about things, to make sure that you're informed, that that you're aware of ideas that are out there.
And ideas out there, you mean work that's being made by your peers or certain magazines? How do you stay aware of all of that work?
Well, I think you have to be aware of the variety of ideas, that to only focus on ideas that you think apply to your own work is a tremendous mistake. And I think it's important for artists to listen and look at all kinds of art that are being made in the time in which they live, and to be aware of how art ideas connect to the times in which we live.
Natalie, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Brainerd, for having me. I do appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIVC. This is Brainerd Carey with The Art World Demystified.